Welcome to The Stack. I'm Aaron, a.k.a. Uncle Landrops. With me is Eric, a.k.a. Grandpa Growth.
Hello. And,
yeah, how you doing, man?
Doing real well. How are you?
I'm hanging in there. I'm no, you know, strikes and gutters, you know what I mean?
Oh, yeah?
Yeah. I just like talking about the Big Lebowski. Any excuse.
My girlfriend just watched Big Lebowski for the first time. Mm-hmm. She didn't tell me she was watching it. It was just suggested on her Netflix queue. And I sort of walked in on her doing this, and I freaked out a little bit. I was like, this is the best movie ever. You don't understand. Like, you're out of your element, Tony.
Did she just – please tell me she didn't just, like, get up and go, it was okay, and, like, shrug her shoulders.
No, she thought it was funny. She said she didn't really get it. Doesn't surprise me. Like, if you're looking for meaning in the movie, you're barking up the wrong tree. It is what it is. It's funny. You have to watch it, accept it. It's absurd. But that's kind of like that drives the humor. That drives the story. The dude is in an absurd situation.
Yeah.
We're not talking about magic.
Yeah. Everything happens to him. Everything happens to him, not he happens to everything else. And anyway, so for
that's
those.
True. I think he would say that, too.
So for those who don't know us, Eric and I have been blogging about Commander for what will be like 3 years in August. We're not just like talking about the Big Lebowski all the time. During that time, we have done so under our fun nicknames that we mentioned early on. Eric, you want to talk about the history of your nickname real quick?
I guess I can.
Okay.
Grandpa Growth, when we lived together in the dormitories in college and played, Aaron likes to come up with fun nicknames for cards. In fact, he may like this more than just about anything else mm-hmm. about Magic.
It's true. It's true.
But I play a lot of Rampant Growth. I tend to prefer ramp that puts actual lands into play as opposed to mana dorks, you know, just creatures that will get swept away in a Wrath of God or something like that. Mm-hmm. So I play a lot of this style effect. And the name Rampant Growth sounds, you know, like the word for this is malapropism, but it yeah. sounds a little bit like Grandpa. So Aaron would call it Grandpa.
Yes, I did.
But there is a card that is just an old guy that is also a Rampant Growth, and that card is Sakura Tribe Elder. It's basically like an old snake man that you can sacrifice to get this effect. So he's the real Grandpa Growth, I think. I mean, unless I'm the real Grandpa Growth.
I don't know who is. Will the real Grandpa Growth please stand
please
up?
Please stand up.
Yeah, I mean, you know, I had this whole phase where I just would reverse the first letter of words, and that's how I came up with Grandpa Growth, because it sounds like Grampant Growth or something like that, and I was just like, well, I'm just going to keep the G on there, because that sounds stupid if I say it the other way.
It sort of does. It transposes nicely. You can still hear the name, even if you mix up the letters.
Yeah, so I really liked the idea of Grandpa Growth, and so Eric decided that was the thing. I have chosen Uncle Landrops because I loved Star Fox 64 way too much, and when I would curse something about Landrops and missing land plays, this was the person that I did. So, like Batman, I took on that persona of the thing I feared the most in Magic.
Maybe you want to explain the Star Fox 64 connection.
Okay, so in Star Fox 64, Andross is the boss. And
the final boss,
the final,
big bad,
the biggest of the bads. And he has a nephew and his name is Andrew. And he is like, they're both monkeys, but he's like Andross, I'm not really sure is a monkey. He's just like a face and two hands. But his, you know, nephew is a monkey. And he had this really odd way of saying things. And when he was upset and when he would lose and die, he would go, Uncle Andross, like that. And I just thought that sounded like Uncle Landrops. So there you go.
It certainly does. We have yet another malapropism. We're only like 5 minutes into the show.
Perfect. Perfect. So of all things we love to talk about on TGZ, this show, The Stack, is something that we had in article form, and we're transferring it to podcast form. This is something that Gramps and I, Eric and I, really, really, really like to do on our old show on the General Zone. And we would each contribute a card. We'd have staff members that contributed cards. And then on Saturday, we'd post it all, and then we'd comment on each other's stuff. So some of it was super secret tech. Some of it was just really silly cards. What were your favorite episodes, Eric?
My favorite episodes had nothing to do with secret tech. Mm-hmm. My favorites were like the theme episodes.
Right.
You know, we just pick an absurd concept, essentially. Or, you know, sometimes it was innovative. And one of the examples I'm going to share really got me thinking differently about the format and card design. But my first favorite is entitled "The One Where the Hate Flows Through Us." And everybody just contributed their favorite hate card or like vicious sideboard card. And that episode was just hilarious. It was top down, not top down, top to bottom jokes. It was very funny. It was very fun to write. Everybody had a different card, like that they were so upset to see, you know, like, because when you come up with your favorite hate card that you're going to complain about, it's not really your quote unquote favorite. It's not the one you like the most. It's the one you hate the most. These are the cards that were bugging us. You know, you could tell that's not how we set it up, but that's how it turned out. And you could just see like the seething arguments about why this card needs to be, you know, destroyed forever. Mm-hmm. And you can see that, you know, we have problems. Emotionally, we have emotional reactions to these cards.
Is that the one where I put Treachery down because I fucking hated it?
I do not remember exactly what you put down.
Okay, well, I can't.
We can look it up. This article exists on the internet.
All I'm saying is I literally can't hate this card anymore because I own one now. So, like, I don't know. I'm a big fat jerk. Or
why do you
hypocrite.
Hate it now?
I don't.
Why do you hate it now that you can play with it?
No. I don't hate it now. I hated it more then. A lot of times the cards that I would pick on the stack ended up being cards that I eventually, if I didn't like it or if I said in a review that I didn't like it, I just ended up playing it. I don't know how that works, but yep.
Okay.
My
favorite.
So okay.
What you said was Treachery.
Yeah. Yeah, that's
and
right.
Like Johnny Confidant said, like Dovescape, you know, like it's just like really strange card to be upset about. I'm gonna let you finish, but my second favorite episode was the one where if we could turn any card into a legendary creature card,
mm-hmm.
like if we could just make one card legendary so you could use it as a general,
yeah,
that one really like baked my noodle for days. You know, we did these articles as we're writing them weeks in advance because we had to give everybody time to comment on each other's stuff and read what we were saying and sort of respond. So I spent so much time thinking about that because that's a whole new possibility space, you know?
Right.
When you want to build a new deck, you usually start with the general. You're usually like, yeah, I want to build a deck around this card. It just got released or you've played against it a lot, but, you know, you just bought a copy, something like that. But this is, you know, very, very unexplored territory. Like any effect in Magic, you can suddenly use it repeatedly every game, you know, like six or seven times. It's your fallback plan. Like, what's your best fallback plan? Like, could you use Rampant Growth? You know, that would be pretty awesome. Like, how many Rampant Growths do you need to win the game? So that episode just really got me thinking. It was very interesting for me personally. Go ahead. What were your favorite episodes?
Okay, I had three. So I liked the bar fight a lot. The one we picked a card.
Yeah, that was a great episode.
Where we picked a card that we would most like to have on our side in a bar fight. And I remember a few of them. I think you picked Serendib Sorcerer. That's a pretty fascinating pick.
It'd be funny.
Yeah. Well, I thought it was a good one. I thought it was a really good one.
It would be like I only see bar fights happening in like either fantasy fiction movies or colleges. So if we're in the college scenario, what's funnier than turning like your aggressive would-be antagonist into a goat? Like that's going to lead to shenanigans all night long and long into the morning.
Yeah, man. Yeah, like, or you could just play literal a Venomancer, but I don't know where you'd get the islands. Like, you know, you just have a Venomancer. We also have, or let's see, on that one, I think I picked Brilliant Ultimatum because I was just like, I just need to be smart for like 5 seconds. You know, if I'm smart for 5 seconds, I'll figure something out. I don't know if that's a cop-out or not, but it was good. So moving on, my number two was the Theros God block. We had a hell of a time doing that. We actually ranked for the first time. We did all five gods, and we ranked them according to whatever ranking system we wanted, and you had a pretty, pretty good one for that.
Yeah, that was – I'm glad we talked about this because basically the stack was just about – it was a charade. Like, here are cards we're planning on talk about. We never actually talked about them. We always talked about some weird ancillary thing. Or at least I did.
Yeah.
The way I ranked the Theros God cards were like number of illegitimate children they would have, which if you know anything about Greek mythology, which Theros is based very heavily on, the Greek gods would interact with humans all the time, and it was usually in the form of sleeping with them. And obviously in a world with no contraceptives, you'd have a lot of illegitimate god children. That's where you got Hercules and, all these other demigods from. So
yeah,
I greatly enjoyed musing about which god was getting the most action in Theros.
That was a great one. I think about that, and recently I listened to Drive to Work, and I was listening to – I forgot what Mark Rosewater was talking about, but he
it's
ended
easy
up
– to do that.
He ends up talking about this card that they had, and it was called Broomstick in Innistrad, and they ended up changing it to something that gives a creature flying. It was some kind of steampunky-looking device. I forgot what it was called. I was talking about it with Will also on an episode. But anyway – the design team came back to him and was like, we can't have brooms in Innistrad. And like, they did the same thing in Zendikar, I guess. And they were like, we don't have shovels here. There's no shovels. And I think there's like no shovels apparently allowed in Zendikar. So
that's untrue, because there's characters in card art that have shovels strapped to their back in Zendikar. I'm 100% sure of this.
Okay. I was pretty sure that they were told there was no shovels allowed. So
that would be funny if they have like other tools, like a pickaxe or like, a dowel, of some kind, but specifically not shovels. Was that like a joke they were running?
I don't know. The design or the creative team. I'm sorry. I keep not appropriating that right. The creative team is a little silly with that. But I think about Theros and changing it back to Eric's illegitimate children thing and then being like, I'm sorry, you can't have, contraceptives, no contraceptives. So my number one favorite episode of the stack, though, so if you guys can go check it out, we'll leave notes in the show notes, links in the show notes for all these, was a card avatar one where we got to pick the card that we thought would be our card avatar. This is pretty popular in shows like Yu-Gi-Oh! Like Yugi is the dark magician and is in the game and, silly stuff like that. And we finally got to pick those cards. So those are really sweet, episodes of the old stack, and this is the new one.
We're excited to transition this to podcast format, because it's something we discussed for a long time, and we think that the design of the show, like the idea for the show, really lends itself better to having a discussion. That's what we always wanted, but we only did text coverage on the blog, obviously, so this is going to be a much more rich and enjoyable format to have these discussions in.
For sure. So we're actually going to do things a little bit different than we did there. It's not just going to be individual cards necessarily. We're going to be doing top five and bottom five lists. And talk about why we're going to do bottom five lists.
One, it has to be a little bit different. So I think bottom five really is the way to go. Like, if we're going to talk about green creatures, what are the five worst green creatures? Like, what are the most embarrassing possible counter spells to be playing? I'm going to enjoy this. If no one else, I will enjoy it.
For sure. I like top anythings as well, and I think that that's because of my cinephile brain and loving High Fidelity just way too much. as a film, but we're also going to be doing some topic discussions, and the first one that we're going to have, it's our episode's called Openers for Openings, because we're going to be talking about opening hands.
We chose this as our first topic for the Stack podcast, because where do you start in Magic except your opening seven? It seems like the most logical place for us to talk about first. So how we're going to play this, we each have pre-written out what we would want our ideal seven card hand to be, regardless of, timeline or Magic's formats. Like, these are just the seven cards you want.
Or money.
Presumably we're talking about EDH. This is Commander Cast All. However, money. We're going to start out by trying to guess each other's opening seven hands. So this is going to be interesting.
Yeah.
Aaron, do you want to go first with guessing mine?
Yes, I do. I do have one question for you before we start, and that's, does the ban list apply?
I assumed it did. I assumed we're using the Commander ban list.
Okay.
So, to avoid just me saying, Black Lotus, Tinker, that would be very easy. I feel like the restrictions they put on formats like the ban list do breed creativity. That is a positive point about the ban list. So that's where my head was going. We're talking about current Commander.
All right.
These have to be real cards. They can't be something you drew on the back of your notebook. Like, they have to have actually been printed. And for me, I thought about it was cards that I actually own. Like, this is – I'm assembling a 7-card hand for my collection. So I'm not going to tell you, Black Lotus, for example, or whatever. Yeah, that's probably not even legal in Commander. But I'm not going to tell you a card that I don't have. Like, this is 7 cards that I could conceivably put into a deck that I own.
Okay. Well, the only reason I asked was because I was just thinking Gifts Ungiven, Caracas. And like, I didn't know if those were going to be things, but if not, then I don't need them, cuz I can just rattle them off right now.
Okay. Well, yeah. I will cross those off the list. Caracas and Gifts Ungiven are not in my opening 7.
Excellent. Excellent. All right. So, the first 2 cards are Island.
Close.
Okay. The next card is Strip Mine.
Okay.
I picked Counterspell, Brainstorm, Capsize, and we'll go with Pongify. I don't think that's one, but I'm just gonna rattle.
You said Island, Pongify,
Strip
Counterspell,
Mine. Strip Mine,
which is a good guess. Maybe I should have that in my opening hand, but I didn't.
And Brainstorm.
Brainstorm, it is. Okay, well, my first question to you, allow me to retort. My first question to you is, why do I have a Brainstorm in my hand but no shuffle effect? Who did that? Who designed this hand?
You're right. I did not think about that. I should have thought about that. Oversight.
Secondly, I think if I – no, you know, I don't mean to just pick this apart, but mm-hmm. – I would not put Pongify in my opening hand because there's better removal spells. And if I get to choose from anything, I just have like, you know, you obviously picked out I'm playing blue, which is correct. But yes. I could just as easily have like Tundra, you know, yeah. And have Swords to Plowshares and just have a better removal spell than Pongify.
Right.
So,
but I know you don't play Tundra. So like there.
True. True. Well, you know, I'll take 3 on the Hallowed Fountain or whatever,
yeah.
You know.
Yeah. No, you're right.
I have a.
Should have hit Fetchland and I'm kicking myself for it.
Yeah. So do you want me to reveal my actual opening 7?
That would be great.
It is Polluted Delta, Scalding Tarn. So I'll give you credit there. Like you pretty much nailed Island.
Okay.
But the more efficient version of Island. Because we need to be able to go get a blue-black land for Thoughtseize.
Gotcha.
If I could choose to have one card ever, you know, like it doesn't matter – what format, limited, legacy, I would choose to have Thoughtseize in my opening hand 100% of the time.
That's a good idea.
Your chances of winning just go up so much by casting Thoughtseize on your opponent.
I got zealous in the moment for sure.
Yeah. It's interesting to me that you said Brainstorm because like that's a cantrip effect that I love playing a lot of those kind of cards, but I didn't have a cantrip in my actual opening 7. So we've got Scalding Tarn, Polluted Delta, Thoughtseize, Temple of Deceit, is my third land.
Ooh,
maybe it should have been Strip Mine. Maybe you're right, but you'll see where I'm going with the plan of this 7.
Yeah,
and Strip Mine is not a part of it. Maybe it should be, but after that, Soul Ring.
Okay,
like come on, yeah, that's okay. The most obvious card in Commander. Everybody's gonna have Soul Ring if they can. Counterspell was in my opening 7, so.
Okay.
So you pretty much won the gold medal because I'm not gonna get any single card. From your opening 7.
Well, let's preface this a little bit. As a player, like I play so many different kinds of decks.
And I'm like, a lot easier to guess than you, I think.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, you know, everybody loves the control. You know, you are the biggest control player I know, and you know, I think that that's part of the reason that you know we got good at Commander anyway, is because that's all you did. When you can beat control, you can beat a whole lot of different decks. So, I can limit the playing field a little bit if you like.
Well, hang on. There's one more card. We got Delta, Scalding Tarn, yep. Dimple of the Seat, Thoughtseize, Sorry, and Counterspell.
Yeah.
Mind Twist is my 7th card.
Oh, hot shit. Yeah, that's sweet.
Yeah. So you can see my plan of Thoughtseize into play tap land and Soul Ring next turn, Mind Twist 2 for 4. That's pretty much how I want to open every game.
That's
let you play a couple lands and go nuts.
What would make you just curious? Why not? Is Hymn to Turok like the second tier in this scenario?
I actually don't play Hymn to Turok, and I haven't for a long time.
Okay.
Because it isn't better than like the available other options. Like, if you're going to draw a card in your opening seven, Hymn to Turok is great. If you're going to draw a card later in the game, Mind Twist is better. And so is Mind Shatter, you know? So, yeah. Like, how many better versions of this same effect are there? And it turns out there's three or four, like, in my opinion, of just ways to get people to discard a bunch of cards. They're not more efficient. Hymn to Turok is the most efficient. But in Commander, when you're going to top deck something late in the game, you want it to be a big deal. And two cards isn't always the biggest deal if they have 14 cards in their hand.
For sure. For sure. So, like, you would rather – are you saying that you would rather play, like, what's the – like, I'm calling it Monomania. I think it's Monomania. the nonsense one that's seven cost discard.
I would never play that card. But if you're asking me what would I rather top deck eight turns into an EDH game,
yeah,
it would be none of the above.
Okay. All right, fair enough. Okay. So, switching gears. So my opening hand. Do you want my one hint?
I need all the help I can get. Give me one hint.
So when I went to pick this, I was like, okay, what's a deck that I feel like has the most opening hands that I would really like, because, you know, like I play Animar and I play like Heartless Hidetsugu, you know, those are mono red, that's mono red burn. I have an all creatures deck. The deck that I actually chose was Glissa the Traitor. So this should be less of an exercise for you because you also play Glissa. But I felt like that was a really good place because it has a lot of the cards that I want to be seeing in my opening hands.
Okay. Well, if that's where you started, then I'm already way off base.
Okay. Well, what were you going to guess just for...
My guess was going to be some sort of green-white dual land.
Okay.
Some sort of green-blue dual land. And some sort of blue-white dual land. You know, so mana fixed for Bant colors.
Okay.
Soul Ring.
Okay.
Cultivate.
Okay.
Terastodon.
Okay.
Which I know doesn't really sound like you. This is my projection of you.
Okay.
This is my brain in your head right now. I can already tell.
Okay.
And I would guess either like some sort of answer card, maybe like an Oblivion Ring, you know?
Okay. Okay. Well, I haven't played Oblivion Ring since like 2011.
Yeah, no, I know this is what I'm saying. Like,
so
it's, there's no way I could get into your head.
Because
like, every single deck I've built for years, except for Glissa the Traitor, it has an island in it. So if you guess island, you're just going to be right. You know? But there's nothing that consistently unifying about your decks, which I knew about Animar, and I was like, does he really play a bunch of rug decks, though? I know he really likes Animar.
Well,
I know you've played a lot of green-white decks against me in the past, at least. You know, like you had a Rise deck for a long time. You had a Sigarda, Host of Herons deck. Like
Gav, whatever.
Yeah. You know, so sure. Like, Doran. That's where I began my thing. It was like, he's played some green white decks in the past. I would feel like he would want green in this deck. So I was right on that path, but I guess I was incorrect about white.
Well, that Saffy deck is the Saffy deck I play is super sweet, but I've actually found that I am playing like a lot of different like rug combination stuff. I'm playing like color or, Creatureless Wart the Raid Mother, and it's been a lot of fun, and you know, I still have Animar.
Creatureless Wart the Raid Mother.
Yeah. Well, now that the Tuck rule's gone, it's just kind of like a free reign for anything that was like a weird strategy before. So, you know, I'm just abusing what I don't like. But the Glissa the Traitor opening hand, just to stay on topic here, I went Forest Swamp because, you know, I just wanted Forest and Swamp because I love basics too much. Myriad Landscape is my third land. So I don't know if you've gotten a chance to play with it. Have you?
I have to look up what this card does.
Okay.
Give me a second.
I can tell you. It's the one that comes in play tapped. It's taps for colorless, and then you can pay two and tap and search for two basic lands that have the same name and put them on the battlefield tapped. It's from the command.
Search a library for up to two basic land cards that share a land type.
Oh, land type. Okay.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it's the same thing. Basic lands in it. Yeah. I've not played with this card.
Okay.
This card is pretty great.
Yeah. It's wonderful. I bought eight when Commander 2014 came out because I was just like, I'm gonna be playing this. I play so much monocolor, like, you know, why not?
Heck, you're absolutely right. Like, if I know I did a set review for this set, but that's more of a curse than a blessing because then like you see all the cards in one lump sum, and, like you have to.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. Obviously, the listeners won't know where we were at, but like that just meant we had several articles to do in 1 week that we can't prepare for ahead of time because the spoiler doesn't come out in full until just a couple of weeks before the set releases. So much stuff runs through or falls through the cracks when new sets come out just because doing so much trying to get ready for the new set on the site. And yeah, I totally agree. I'm going to purchase 8 of these right now and play all of them. I don't know how I haven't seen this.
Well,
I obviously did a review of it and it should be popular. If it's not,
it's pretty awesome. I'm even playing it in some like double color decks, but you know, that's neither here.
Why not? I mean,
yeah,
I would say like any deck that doesn't have green can't afford not to play this. It's colorless mana ramp.
Yep.
You know?
Yeah. I like it a lot more than Unstable Obelisk in that little set of like ramp utility stuff. Anyway, so those are my three lands. My other, let's see, did I count this right? Right. Yes. Okay. So I know that you're going to be able to get one of these right. So I want you to just go ahead and guess it. It's a creature.
It's a creature.
Yeah.
That's in your Glissa deck.
Yep.
That's so good. You'd want to have it to defend against Mind Twist.
Yes.
I don't know if I can. I think you're going to have to me off the hook, man.
Well, Solemn Simulacrum.
Oh yeah. Well, that's an easy one.
Yeah. Yeah. So that was like the gimme one that I thought maybe you would get. Night's Whisper is a card that I would have in my opener.
Nice. A quality card to have in your opening hand.
Yeah. Go for the Throat. So there's my removal. And then my last card would probably just go ahead and be, I would actually play probably Sovok Replica or Executioner's Capsule, one of those two, just because I want to have something so that I can start getting Glissa online.
Yeah, that's what I was going to be my first question. Like, so he's halfway through his hand and he hasn't shown up one artifact yet, but then you put in like the two that I'd really want to get a Glissa deck going. Like, if you can chain Ecaps or chain Solemn Simulacrums, yeah, you're getting way ahead. And if they can't stop that, they can't stop Glissa. You know, that is the fundamental kernel that makes this deck good.
Yeah. Okay, so let's go talk about our hands real quick. What is irreplaceable in your opener?
The Thoughtseize.
Okay.
In mine would be the only card. I mean, it's not irreplaceable. If I had, you know, another effect like this, like Duress, for example. Let's just say I had Duress.
Okay.
This hand would still be fine.
Okay.
If I had Despise, this hand would not be great, but it's definitely a snap keep.
You think so?
If my hand was Polluted Delta, Scalding Tarn, Temple of Deceit, Despise, Sol Ring, Counterspell, Mind Twist, yeah, I'm keeping that every time. Like, I just don't mulligan that hand. Hmm. It has Sol Ring. It has enough lands to cast spells. Sol Ring, Counterspell. The rest could be a ham sandwich. It doesn't matter.
Yeah, I guess so. I guess.
So I guess for me, replaceability, like, there's a lot of it. Any of the lands is pretty easy to say. Like, I don't need Polluted Delta specifically, but basically any land that could get blue and black. Mind Twist has replacements.
Yeah.
Mind Shatter, for example. It's not as good. Mm-hmm. And either being a turn late with your Disruption or, you know, getting one less card, that's a tough pill to swallow for me. That's why I play Mind Twist and not Mind Shatter.
Right.
But it not necessarily a deal breaker. I think that would take the hand down a peg. It's not like top quality anymore.
Yeah.
And Counterspell is totally replaced. You know, there's half a dozen other cards for blue that will counter a spell that I need to. Silengar Scorn, even, you know, like this card is raging across Standard with the amount of dragons that are being played, and I've been really impressed with it. Like,
yeah,
I played Daze in Pauper. Yeah. I think you can get away with playing Daze in Commander. Some people might balk at that or like laugh, like, oh, you know, people don't stop tapping out. And we're talking about your opening seven. People are going to cast spells on the first five turns, and they're going to try and use their mana if they can. Maybe Daze isn't great when you draw it on turn 15, but like that's not the purpose. Not every card is universally, you know, awesome.
Right. I really like Mana Tithe. You know, I don't see any problems with that. You know, I play that all the time.
Mana Tithe is hilarious. Like, it's a great emotional, like, mental victory. Because when people run into tax effects like this, they feel so stupid. Like, oh my god, I can't believe I didn't play around Days. Especially, you know, like people who play Legacy or Pauper as well as Commander.
Yeah.
They just feel like a complete tool bag. It's because it's a cardinal sin of competitive formats. Like, think about it. You know, could they have a soft counterspell? Why not? You know. Yeah.
Well, the other card that you know, in talking about soft stuff, I also play Rebuff the Wicked, which is just the softest of all time. And people run into that too. It's really nuts. Kind of surprising.
Yeah. This I have not played because if I were going to have a blue-white deck, which is pretty much really the only reason I think I'd play white at this point, I'm really kind of turned off to white just because, like,
for sure,
it's getting old. You know, not because the cards aren't there to support a mono-white deck, but not the way I'd want to play it.
No.
But if you get this, you know, into a blue-white deck, you should have better options. You know, better right. one-mana counterspells even.
Yeah. Okay, so if I took – so, like, I guess this would be the Thoughtseize Duress test. If we took a card away, like, would you still want the hand? You know, or how many times would you be willing to mulligan to get the hand that you want? I think with my hand, because of the way that Glissa works, I play a lot of, like, redundancy stuff or things that kind of disguise themselves as other things in the deck. And so, you know – in terms of going back a little bit to the what's irreplaceable or mulligan, things like that, I'm willing to pretty much – I think that most of my hands can survive because I've learned how to play against the duress, and I've done it a lot, and I did it a lot back when you know, I were playing a lot of games.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, what are your thoughts on the on getting duressed yourself?
You could take any card out of my seven. I would still keep the resulting six, which I have designed into this set of cards. You're like, I wasn't going to keep – there's very few seven-card hands that I would keep that you could take away one card and the hand still, like, isn't good. Sometimes that happens. You know, you're playing a combo strategy and, oh, the seven-card hand is great. It's got the thing that I need. But if you take that away, the hand just kind of doesn't come together. I tend not to play decks like this. I'm a big fan of two-card combos, but my decks are usually built in a way that – there's a two-card combo, or maybe several of them, but also dozens of ways to find it. You know, 10 to 20 ways to either draw extra cards, search your library, you know, tutoring effects. So I tend to appreciate decks that have resilient hands. I'm not afraid of being duressed on turn one. It happens to me a lot.
Yeah.
In basically every format, I expect that someone's going to be able to interact with my hand even before they turn up a swamp, you know?
Yeah. For sure. I mean,
either that or counterspell. You know, if they counterspelled a key thing for my hand, it'd suck to lose Sol Ring. That definitely hurts the hand quite a bit. But if you're looking at six cards and you see land, two disruption spells and a counterspell, yeah, I feel like I have to keep that. All right. So moving on, how many times are you willing to mulligan to get the hand that you want? Obviously, the question is a little bit deck dependent. But we'll try and keep it top level here. What's your thoughts on this? How many times are you willing to mulligan to keep a hand?
Once. That's it.
So in Commander, you're just, if you don't like your seven, you'll take your free mulligan and just keep whatever you get?
Pretty much. I mean, here's the thing, you know, because of the way that I kind of goldfish, you know, this is something that I actually really noted when I was trying to figure out what my opening hand would be my ideal. It was a really interesting study because I didn't think about what I would want in opening hand, and obviously because of the breadth of decks that I have, or the width, I don't know what it is, it's some kind of amount of decks, different kinds of decks that I play, I feel like I want different things in those decks, and so you know, it's going to depend on the matchup, it's going to depend on, you know, some other things, and most of the time if I can just know that I have, you know, three lands or four lands and some disruption, I'm good to go. I really don't think that I have a specific preference. I try to play the game and I broadcast, you know, I don't broadcast that I have removal, but I definitely would rather have removal and stuff versus just dirtily derpy creatures unless I'm playing Animar because I know I'm the threat.
Mm-hmm.
So how do you,
I'm right there with you. I agree that people in Commander specifically tend to over mulligan. there's obviously a big disparity between your best cards and your worst cards, even in tight deck lists in Commander.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes you can just end up with jank, you know, like you have enough situational cards in most Commander decks that you can see a seven that's completely unplayable. So people will mulligan, and then, you know, if they come into a seven card, you know, their second seven card hand, and it's mediocre, like, I think you just keep that. Like, how bad could it really be? The card matters, especially if you're in multiplayer. This is something that gets me.
Mm-hmm.
That, like, if I'm in a multiplayer game, I just don't care. I think my chances of winning actually go up the less I do during the early turns. If I see seven lands, I'm just like, oh, this hand is perfect. I'm going to do nothing, get completely ignored, and then 7 to 10 turns into the game when I actually, like, draw something relevant, it's kind of like I'm going off, you know, like, the battlefield is just littered with weakened opponents. I've been unmolested for seven turns. I've got a bunch of lands in play. That's a great hand to me. And I've done that against you, even. Like, yeah. I think that I keep more, like, no action hands than anyone else I know. Maybe that's bad. Maybe it's loose keeps, but
yeah,
I'd like to think that I've been playing the game long enough to know what's a keepable hand, particularly in the decks that I myself build and play.
Yeah.
I just am very loath to mulligan down to six in Commander when cards, they're just so important in this format.
Yeah. Well, I think one of the big differences for me is that, like, so I think the matchup is huge. You know, when we battled, like, Anamar versus whatever deck you wanted to play against it, you know, Wanderer or Glissa or something like that, you know, I was definitely more likely to mulligan hands when I knew that, you know, I had to get a fast start versus a deck versus, you know, just another, you know, like Glissa the Traitor, for example. Like, I knew that if I had, you know, Reclamation Sage, which wasn't even out when we were playing this game, but if I had Reclamation Sage or something like that in my hand, I was definitely more likely to keep that versus a hand that didn't have a removal spell for, you know, for your Nevenir's Disc or something like that, because I knew that that was the only play that you really had against the deck. And so, you know, I do think about the matchups like that a lot, and I think, you know, once people flip up commanders at my table now, you know, I know we don't really keep our deck lists a secret or anything. You know, I switch out cards every now and then, and so does everybody else. So, you know, but we look at each other's stuff and we know generally what people have. And I don't know if that gives me, like, an unfair advantage because of the way that I can read, you know, some of these players. Like, I, no joke, dude, I called a snag on some, I called somebody had snag in their hand one night and I got it right. you know, I don't know how I did it. I still don't. I was just like, I know he has snag. I'm going to play into it. And I did it on purpose. And, it was, you know, it was a really gratifying moment. I had another moment where, somebody Diabolic Revelations for like 12 and I called like 9 of the cards, you know, just being able to do that. If you know somebody's deck is insane. Yeah.
Well,
insane.
Let me say this. Matchups are overanalyzed in Standard. They're underanalyzed in Commander, just dramatically. People don't think, this is a common problem outside Magic too, but people just don't think, like, you get to know so much about your opponent's deck because you know them, because you've seen it before, because you know what their commander is. If you just, you don't know this person, but they flip up a certain commander, you at least know the color combinations and you know what cards are good in Commander in those colors. Expect to see them. Expect to see them in everybody's decks, you know? Like, yeah. there's 20,000 something cards in Magic, but how many of those are commander worthy? You know, like, how many do you really see on a regular basis, knowing the people and the place that you play regularly? So I agree with you completely. Matchups underthought in Commander, because that's powerful information. And let me say this too, you're not using an unfair advantage. That's like the most fair advantage. Things you should know.
Yeah.
We have this funny idea at my job that, like, if you're being investigated, like, they can prosecute you X number of days after you committed a violation,
mm-hmm.
or X number of days after you should have known a violation took place. And I find that phrase very interesting. Like, should have known. How do they know that I should have known? If somebody else knows, you should know. If your opponent knows, you should know. That's how competition works. That's not an unfair advantage. That's like the only advantage that we ever have. Mm. You can draw whatever cards you want. You can have a good draw, bad draw, but, like, it's me playing you. You know, that's how Magic is.
Yeah, for sure. So, what would you say determines a good hand? Just to kind of wrap this up.
Interactivity for me, number one, is like if I don't have a strong plan myself, can I do something about my opponent's plan? I think proactivity is extremely important in Magic, and it gets underrepresented in Commander because people kind of like they just want to play derpy cards and like whatever's their favorite. But you should always have a proactive plan. But those two things really for me, like mix of land and spells, irrelevant. Do you have all your Kellers? Irrelevant. If you have a five color deck, but your hand is island, 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 counterspell, counterspell, like what, keep it. It's awesome, you know?
Yeah. Well, for me, I definitely agree that interactivity is important. And just to go off of something you said, where you're more likely to keep a hand with seven lands, no doubt. I've done it before, because I can trust that my deck is going to give me, because I know that I have seven lands out of my deck, I know that I'm going to be drawing into some kind of gas at some point. That's the logic that you have when you look at a hand like that. For me, the big key point is card advantage, and if, I think that you can see that a lot when you look at my opening hand with Solemn and Night's Whisper and Silvok Replica a little bit. I mean, that's some value right there with Silvok Replica, and on top of that, I have Myriad Landscape, which is just the most value I think you can get in a land short of Mika Koro. I really do believe that landscape is like the next real thing.
Yeah, I agree. I want to point out the glaring irony here that, like I said, I'm into keeping seven landers or, you know, any reasonable six. I consider myself to have loose mulligan standards. That's a self-made commentary. Like I would say that about me because I know I've kept some hands I shouldn't have. But in terms of relative value, the hand I put together that has Black Source into Thoughtseize is just infinitely better than a seven land hand. It's so much better that I can't even describe it, but I would keep both. You know, I'd keep both almost 100% of the time. But does your hand have a good script? It's better than every hand that doesn't have a good script. Does your hand have interactivity? It's better than pretty much every hand that doesn't have interactivity unless you have the best possible script. If you can win on turn one and your opponent can't interact, that's better than an interactive hand. So I guess maybe non-interactive is the best quality. But yeah, you gotta have something to do. No matter how loose your keeps are, you have to realize at some point you're gonna have to play some spells and actually interact in the game.
All right. So I think that pretty much wraps our discussion up. Do you have any final thoughts, or are we good?
My final thoughts on opening hands. If I could put a stamp on this, it would be that I feel like these seven cards, mine perfectly encapsulated me, and I feel like you sort of pretty much nailed down like I'm predictable. Maybe that's a good thing, maybe that's a bad thing. You know, like predictability obviously isn't good,
Well,
but consistency is sometimes construed as a good thing. And I've my takeaway would be that if Aaron can accurately assess my ideal seven card hand, that means he has a pretty good shot at identifying my regular hands. So maybe I need to change things up a bit. That's my takeaway.
yeah, I mean, I think that this is part of the reason that I play so many different things is I've been able to research a lot of different decks, and so because of that, I think I have kind of an extra advantage in the fact that I've had the practice in knowing what it's like to sit in that in your chair, the control chair, or the aggro chair, or other kinds of chairs that exist, like the Voltron chair, and know what these people
Other
want to
kinds of
play.
the Iron Throne,
Yeah,
the cockpit of Voltron.
the cock.
Not the deck, the actual cockpit of Voltron.
Yeah, these are way better chairs than the ones that I was giving out. I was just labeling them. They might as well have been chairs for an auditorium, but you've given them way better proper nouns. So, all right, so I think that wraps up our segment pretty nice.
Yeah,
We've got some
that's our ideal seven card hands. If you guys feel like chiming in on the discussion, you know, leave a message or leave a comment, shout at us. We're on social media. Tell us what your ideal seven card hands would be.
For sure. You can find all of our contact info in the show notes below, so go ahead and contact us. We'd love to hear from you. Thanks again for tuning in to the first episode of The Stack and powering through it with us as we continue to get better. This is a new experience for us, and we're really excited about it, and we hope that we can get you to be on our journey. But for now, we're going to have to sign off, so go ahead and take her easy, dudes. We'll be seeing you.